So wherever you see deep sorrows, great losses, you find someone who's been reduced to a receptivity. Thank heaven it's a dream. Whereas when you find someone who is got it made, as it were, they're saying, well, I'd like to prolong this dream a little longer. It all depends on what you've been through. So sometimes the problems you've encountered, the great losses you've had, are blessings in disguise, even though you don't invite them. Christianity was supposed to introduce the truth at one time, but didn't. I suppose you might say that it couldn't help itself. It didn't know the truth. And yet there was a stubbornness of not wanting to know the truth, too. There were those of high standing in the Christian ranks who caught the vision of truth. Oftentimes they were shunted into the background. If they wrote a book, it had to be published posthumously. They were not allowed to have a platform. And the reason was very simple. The truth was not wanted. Man doesn't want other people to be free. Man wants to keep people in servitude. Man wants to be the one who dispenses favors. And so we find that even though Christianity had an opportunity to introduce the pure truth of Christ, maybe some poor little monk living on bread and water somewhere knew it, but couldn't get anyone to listen. Or some great writer would turn out a book and he'd find out that before it reached the presses, it had been denuded of everything that was important. He couldn't say much. And then you find in the Middle Ages, there was so much bloodletting, and all the bloodletting was of the people who had the truth, not of the ones who didn't. They were the ones who did all the bloodletting. So you find that in the dream, the hero is not quite the one you'd expect to be the hero. And truth goes hunting for someone to accept it and to make it known, but it never seems to work. So Christianity has languished for 2,000 years. And even though truth seeps in, you find it doesn't seep out. Just little portions, fragments, suggestions, but pure, undiluted truth is only going to come to you through your own inner work. The fact that a Joel was able to move so freely in this world and present truth to us is amazing. And he said some things in his books that you can hardly believe. The wrong people read it. When people in religion, in organized religion, read it, they didn't think he meant what he said. They didn't understand, just to call God it. That's how hard it has been for truth to raise its head in this world. You're branded. One person told me the other day that she left her church for this study, and friends don't call her up anymore. They think she's an atheist. She knows God better now than they do, and that's why they can't understand. And so I guess we have to suffer to the extent that we're going to have criticism, sometimes very close at home. But blessed are ye when men persecute you and despitefully use you. How clearly he saw all that. If we are persecuted and despitefully used, it's a badge of honor. We can at least say, well, they wouldn't do that to me if I didn't have the truth. Perhaps this world is slowly becoming more balanced, maybe a little more tolerant of truth, because those whose tolerance is finally being released may sense the need for truth in their lives. They've got a little eye open. I don't like that message, but you know, it might be useful. And so our responsibilities are continuing and multiplying. I think we have Mr. Satan on the run. And I think as we grow stronger and less afraid, even though we don't go out parading, we can walk in the marketplace. We can express through our action some of the truth we've learned. We can stand up to the storm. We can look at all forms of evil, sometimes without too much fear. And we can see through many of the illusions that once were very real to us. Now, with this type of progress, there is a loosening up of the indomitable belief in evil that has been on the earth. And you find that what you read in the Revelation of St. John, the predictions, are happening. Then they were only predictions, and people didn't even know they were being predicted when they read it. But now you see them, they're happening. There's more understanding. And so we must look at all of the predictions. What was he telling us? Because every word we find in John is slowly coming to pass. There's nothing he said that was a theory. You must remember, he was the only living disciple of Jesus Christ when he wrote his revelation. There wasn't one more disciple alive on the earth. And he had seen things, which we would call miracles, that no other person had seen. And his thoughts were based on what he had seen and what he knew to be And he was also in constant communication with the inner Christ, which is in communication with infinity. So therefore, he was writing another Bible. Every word, when decoded, turns out to be exactly what is happening. John saw then that nobody was in the dead bodies that Jesus allegedly resurrected. Nobody was in them. And for 2,000 years, nobody has realized that nobody was in them. And nobody has realized that just as there was nobody in those bodies, hold on to your chair. You know what I'm about to say. That's hard to feel. Do you experiment with that from time to time? It would pay. We've got to understand it. There are no body in these bodies. But there is somebody there. It's just not the one we think is there. You see, we can't take a segment of God and put it in a body and say, there's someone. If God is all and God is one, you can't separate it into bodies. And that's difficult for those of us who are in the work. You imagine what it's like for those who are not in the work. But when you are able to consider it and then live with it, test it, try to prove it, and find something happening that wouldn't happen if it weren't true, then you begin to build your evidence. In the healing work is I think possibly that's one of the major purposes of the healing work, to bring into your realization that there's no body in a body. Because unless you apply that principle, you don't get a result. And when you apply that principle, you get a result. For instance, a person mails a letter to Joel before it leaves a box that it's mailed in, the person has an answer. What has happened? Does the message go all the way to Joel back in wherever he's living at the time, Kailua? Or, and then does he send a message back to the person? Is there some telepathy involved? Or, is Joel right there where the letter is mailed, when it's mailed, and the message seems to travel all the way back to Kailua, but it doesn't. The message is right where the individual is mailing it, because the body of Joel, the real body, is everywhere. It is not in that body, but it's everywhere. And you say, well, that's a nice theory. But then it happens to you, and it's no longer a theory. It's an electrifying truth. You in your real body are everywhere. You in this sense of body are not even there. And as ridiculous as it sounds, it's the unfamiliarity with it that makes it sound that way. Now, in your next experience, in your soul, because of its infinity, and because of your acceptance of its infinity, you find your soul body is not limited to time or space. And it's the preview of that that we're feeling in this dimension. Now, I know a number of people in this room who have experiences of that nature, where they have proved that they're not in this body, because they have experienced themselves elsewhere when necessary. When you have to be somewhere, Spirit is there with you, because Spirit is your name. And you can't be there if you're in this body. And yet, when you're there, you're also here. You don't go anywhere. It's your consciousness that moves, but yourself is always everywhere. It never goes anywhere because it's already there. You'll get used to it. And when you do, you feel the meaning of the omnipresence of Spirit. Because that is the nature of our being. We are everywhere. And when you find us in one place, it doesn't mean we're not in another. Because we're only in that one place invisibly. And we're also in every other place invisibly at the same time. We can't help ourselves. That's the nature of spiritual being. That's the truth of you, and you'll awaken to it. The Christ of you will awaken to it, you to it. This is what John knew and what John predicted would cover the earth. He said the earth would no longer cover its slain. And because John speaks only the words of truth, which the Spirit speaks through John, when we know what he meant, we have this fact staring us in the face. When the earth will no longer cover its slain, that's an inverted way of saying death will be eliminated on the earth. All right, now at first, the fact that you're not in this body as you think you are sounds ridiculous. Then you begin to see, well, I am everywhere. Well, that's not too bad then. Then finally, how can you kill someone who's everywhere? And John is seeing all of that when he says the earth will no longer cover its slain. Who's there to kill? There's only one being, and you're it. Slowly, the impossible becomes the accepted reality. And you can see why we have to move through these slow degrees of learning, because these truths are so momentous. Maybe we have to consider ourselves blessed to be even given them now so that we can chew them and chew them and chew them until they become bite-sized, until we finally are able to assimilate them and then start to think about practicing being that everywhere self. Joel said that he was one with everyone who was in the Spirit. And you are one with everyone who's in the Spirit when you are in the Spirit too. I can't say for sure that you're going to feel your Spirit everywhere. It isn't the same as touching something. But I think if you're in heavy into meditation, you may have discovered that there is a sense of not exactly touching, but you can almost say to the minute that you are in some other place without feeling a touching, because it's a different form of communication. I don't know how to explain it even. It's not something that goes well with words, but it's something you feel in a certain way. And you know, right now, I'm making contact with the spirit of so-and-so in such and such a place. Right now, we're making that contact. Now, you may feel that contact here, because you're always here. But you're making that contact all the way through to right there, too, at the same time. And that is a spiritual impulse that you feel. And when the proof of it comes to you, it's quite exciting, because it confirms something you really want to know. You're always testing who I am and what I am and what are the limitations and what are the capacities. And usually you find that you're always 100 steps behind the demonstration of Jesus Christ, but you feel that the gap is closing. You're getting there. You're learning. And every time you learn one thing, 10 more open up that you didn't understand before. When you read John, it's reassuring to find that things that in your own life you may have felt are right there. And you could have seen them in John before and maybe had your experience earlier. John, in his revelation, is going through the transition that we are going through. And John has completed that transition when he sits down to write the revelation. When you have your transition, if you wanted to do what John did, you would then write the revelation of St. John, and it would be the revelation of Mary Jones or somebody like that. Because that's what he went through, and he was writing to us about it. And when you want to understand your transition, what it's all about, you'll have to go to John. You'll find it in total detail, but the images are unfamiliar. They're not images in this world. They can't be, because they came to him from the higher level, and his soul had to translate them as closely as possible to this world. John says that we will see the day on this earth when there will be no death. Now, Jesus has been saying that all along. If you believe on me, if you follow me, if you continue in my word, you shall not see death. John comes right behind him and says the earth will no longer bury its slain. But you know, before Jesus and John, that's what Isaiah was saying. How could anyone understand it without these experiences with John and Jesus? He was saying the same thing. He said the earth will not bury its slain. He said it in another, different language, different words. But if anything, we have the collaboration, the corroboration of men who lived in the Spirit, that the era of death is approaching its end. Now, that doesn't mean that 5 billion people are going to not die. But whenever there's an era approaching, there will be the forerunners. Isaiah was one of those forerunners. Now, among us, I believe, we have some of the forerunners. I think that's why transition is being taught. Because through your efforts and through your non-death, those who follow, well, you know how it is. If the world learns that the world is round, all of a sudden everybody believes it's round. Before that, everybody believed it's square. And if death someday isn't here, why, nobody will question it. Nobody at all. Be just as normal as could be. No death. Nobody will think about it. They'll have other things to think about. So I would say that as a forerunner, you're sort of a pace setter. And I don't know how many people will be influenced by your non-death or when you're going to achieve it. It may be in this lifetime. It may be five lifetimes from now. I would say your non-death depends on your willingness to awaken to Christ. Only Christ can move you up the ladder. I would say that 24 hours a day is the amount of time one should spend on knowing truth. No less. We can't afford not to know truth. And there is no reason in the world why you can't know truth and continue living so that everybody thinks you're just another mortal on this earth. You don't have to wear a button, something in your buttonhole. We know truth. Why not? Why should we abandon truth? And so, if you go on living in truth and living a normal life, showing less and less of the problems of the world, that becomes your normal consciousness, and wherever you meet a lie, it's sort of like one of these Mercedes Benzes that takes the road and just takes out all the wrinkles. Just goes right over it. You go right over all the untruths. Because your consciousness doesn't bounce and bump with each untruth. I feel we're in an excellent position now. I think we're over the 50-50 mark. And the seesaw is going the other way. And so I think we have a right to feel encouraged, to feel even confident that we're moving up the ladder of transition. The fact that we're discussing it, able to change ideas, move them around, understand what's put before us. And you'll find that the more you understand, the more is given you, and the greater your capacities become. Because as you write out a lie and another lie, you find 10 more behind it that give up. All things are possible to Christ. Even that the dead will no longer remain buried. But that should not surprise us when we really know that eternal life is the nature of life. Now, I'd like to clarify that point. Eternal life is the only life there is. Whatever life is not eternal is an imitation of life. And so when you come into eternal life, you're merely coming into that which you already are. And knowing eternal life is your natural inheritance, and that it's who you are now, you have an advantage over an individual who doesn't know that. you can accept eternal life as what you are now, and you can discard everything that contradicts it. I mean, something threatens your life. You could accept the threat as real yesterday, but if you believe you are eternal life, your life, you know, isn't threatened. How can you be threatened if your life is eternal? Not will be, but is. And so when Jesus revealed that this boy in the coffin is alive and that his life is eternal, and therefore I will merely bring him up to where he is instead of where he appears to be, he was really abolishing death on earth right there, but we didn't know it. He was making it known to mankind that you're being hypnotized into the belief that death is possible, because you see it everywhere. You think it's happening. But I'm giving you one isolated case, and I'm sure that won't turn the whole tide. But I'll give you another case, and then a third case. And eventually, you will begin to see the miracle of eternal life. And it is your life now. He, in other words, took what would be called future evolution and brought it into the now. He brought life into the eternal now, but people were not able to see what he was doing. 2,000 years, we have a glimmering that life is the eternal now. Your life is completely finished unto eternity. And that's not a statement made by a person. That is the statement made by the Christ when he says, to know God aright is life eternal. Death is an illusion, one of the great illusions of the world. And when you see it, you're looking with the wrong mind. Jesus, seeing it, looks with the Christ mind and sees life. Man looks with the human mind and sees death. They're both looking. One sees the reality, one sees the imitation. Paul said, faith is the ability to see the unseen. When you look at death with faith, you know you're looking at eternal life. And one of the greatest statements I think ever made on this earth was that all death is really asleep. And Jesus said it. We thought he was kidding. Lazarus sleepeth. This is not death. This is asleep for the glory of God. All death is asleep. Sleep being a form of hypnosis. I want to thank you all for being here. I want to thank the spirit of San Diego, which came forth in a lot of people and did a lot of wonderful things for us. Most of all, I want to thank the you that is real. I don't want to thank the image. I want to thank the divine image, the self, the real self. I want to thank in you the eternal being that is there. Because that eternal being is going to make our universe the kingdom of heaven on earth. That'll be our permanent Easter. I have total faith in it. absolute, I mean, unquestioned faith. Because it's here now. It's not tomorrow. And the perfection of your being is here now too. We are in a state of oneness realized. And in that state of oneness, we have a marvelous work to do. It's been a beautiful seminar. It's been a beautiful opportunity to live with those of you who insist on truth, at least the highest truth we're capable of at the moment. And I thank you for the opportunity to share this truth with you. Thank you very much. I'll be glad to say goodbye to all of you whenever you wish, and I look forward to the meetings we're going to have this coming week. Thank you.